Good afternoon. My name is Mariama, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Coursera 3-month and year-end 2018 results conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, please press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your questions, please press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Dan Poirier, Chief Executive Officer. You may begin your conference.
Thank you, Operator. This is Dan Poirier. Appreciate everyone joining us today. I have with me here in the Toronto office Kevin Mills, our CFO, Akash Sahai, our EVP of Strategy and Business Development. Also online with us is Tom McColl, the Chairman of the Board. We're going to break this up into a couple of segments. We're going to start with Kevin going through the financials. I'll give a brief overview on the Maitre D side. We'll get Akash to do us an, provide us with an update on the STP side, and then Tom McColl will give us a brief overview of the, some of the strategic initiatives we're working on. With without further ado, I'll pass it on to Kevin and let him take over.
All right. Thank you, Dan. As usual, I'll take a minute and read the ground rules for today's call, particularly as it applies to forward-looking financial information. The discussions today could include forward-looking statements that are based upon current expectations, which involve risks and uncertainties associated with our business and the environments in which our business operates. Any statements contained herein that are not statements of historical fact may be deemed as forward-looking, including those identified by expressions of anticipate, believe, plan, estimate, expect, intend, and similar expressions to the extent that they relate to the company or its management. The forward-looking statements are not historical facts, but reflect Coursera's current expectations regarding future results or events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results or events to differ materially from current expectations, including matters discussed in the Risk and Uncertainty section of the company's annual information form, which was filed on April 1, 2019, with the regulatory authorities. Coursera assumes no obligation to update forward-looking statements or to update reasons why actual results could differ from those reflected in the forward-looking statements unless required by law. Now that those formalities are out of the way, I want to give some friendly reminder that due to the discontinued operations accounting treatment applied during the third quarter of 2017, the company's financial statements were previously represented to remove the impact of the sale of the Fingerprints asset. This sale took place on September 14, 2017, as disclosed in Note 24 of the annual audited financial statements. With the Fingerprints transaction and discontinued operations being addressed, and prior to reviewing the financial results, I'd like to remind attendees today that seasonality does influence Coursera's financial results, whereby Q1 and Q3 tend to be seasonally weaker quarters, and whereas Q2 and Q4 tend to be seasonally stronger quarters. On to the financial results of the continuing operations for Coursera Limited. Total revenue was $2.6 million for the fourth quarter of 2018, which is a decrease of 23.3% from the record fourth quarter of 2017, but was a 9.7% increase compared to the third quarter of 2018. Total revenues were $10 million, which was a decrease of $6.5 million, compared to the prior year. The decrease in annual revenues can be attributed primarily to two factors, the first being the company's exit from certain business units during fiscal 2017, namely BizPro, Century Cash Register, and ANA Point of Sale Solutions, due to their unprofitability combined with lower sales achieved from Coursera's European operations on a year-over-year basis. Additionally, during the year ended December 31st, 2018, the company reported higher sales of its kitchen display systems, or KDS product, compared to the prior year, driven by slightly higher new installations, in addition to the new KDS recurring revenue streams for annual support and maintenance on the sales generated through 2017. Pacera continues to see new opportunities for the KDS product line into 2019. Recurring revenues are a key non-GAAP financial metric measured by the company, which includes certain components of revenues such as maintenance contracts, referral revenue sharing agreements, and other recurring revenue agreements. During fiscal 2018, the company completed a process review of its revenue reporting accounts in order to improve its operational revenue reporting. As a result of this process review, the company identified additional revenues that should have been reported as recurring revenues during the prior periods. The new approach to reporting recurring revenues has not resulted in a change to the company's reported historical total revenues, but has resulted in an update of the breakdown of those total revenues and the management categories in which they belong. This process improvement has resulted in the historical recurring revenues being represented from what they had previously been reported by the company during the third quarter of 2018. In the recurring revenue section of the annual management discussion and analysis filed on April 1, 2019 by the company, a reconciliation has been provided to display the quarterly differences between the historical and new reporting calculation for recurring revenues. The company reported that recurring revenues increased 3.3% during 2018 when compared to 2017. The company's recurring revenues are comprised of both contractual and transactional revenues. During 2018, the company provided a $2.2 million secured credit loan facility to DLT Labs, Inc. As at December 31, 2018, the note receivable was overdue, and IFRS accounting policies relating to financial instruments require the company on a periodic basis to complete an estimation of credit losses. This analysis resulted in the company recording a loss allowance of approximately $592,000 based on a probability-weighted default model calculated as at December 31, 2018. The full balance of the note receivable, which was approximately $2.3 million, including interest as at December 31, 2018, remains owing and is secured by assets of the borrower. The company's normalized EBITDA for continuing operations for 2018 was a loss of $1.6 million, which was an increase in the loss by $227,000 from fiscal 2017. The same metric of normalized EBITDA for continuing operations for Q4 2018 was a loss of $187,000. This was an improvement in the loss, or a reduction in the loss, by $163,000 and $149,000 compared to the losses incurred during Q4 2017 and Q3 2018, respectively. The company throughout 2018 continued to reduce operating expenditures relating to technology, operations and support, and sales and marketing, but the increase in the normalized EBITDA loss during the fiscal 2018 was driven by a decrease in annual revenues in addition to the previously discussed loss allowance incurred in relation to the note receivable. Management continues to focus its attention on reducing its controllable costs. During 2018, the company was able to exit its long-term and high-cost lease obligation for its corporate office location in London, Ontario, in favor of a smaller, cost-effective, and more flexible office space arrangement. As a result, during the third quarter of 2018, the company incurred a break fee of approximately $190,000 to exit the lease early and sell property, plant, and equipment at that location. The ongoing facility costs for the company's corporate employees have been reduced by more than over 50% under this new arrangement, while eliminating the ongoing lease commitment for the company. The company's net operating capital was $8.3 million as at December 31, 2018, compared to $12 million and $9.9 million at December 31, 2017 and September 30, 2018, respectively. The reduction in the working capital in the comparative periods primarily resulted from the losses incurred by the companies during the comparable periods. On December 22, 2017, the U.S. enacted the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, known as U.S. Tax Reform. This reform significantly changed the U.S. corporate income tax laws by, among other things, creating a territorial tax system with a one-time mandatory tax on previously deferred foreign earnings of U.S. subsidiaries. As a result, the company recorded a current tax expense of $293,000 with a future income tax recovery of $98,000, all recorded during the fourth quarter of 2017, representing a net tax expense of $195,000 in respect to the U.S. tax reform. Upon finalizing the 2017 U.S. tax return in 2018, the company determined that there was no tax owing in respect to the U.S. transition tax, as the company was able to utilize tax loss carryforwards and foreign tax credits to offset amounts that otherwise would have been payable. Therefore, during 2018, the company reversed all amounts that were previously expensed in relation to the U.S. tax reform. We're almost there, so sorry for taking so long. Just a couple more points to make. The annual financial statements for 2018 include a note disclosure which the company adopted on January 1st, 2018, being IFRS 15. This standard addressed revenue from customer contracts as disclosed in Note 4 of the company's annual audited financial statements. This new disclosure increases the level of granularity disclosed by the company with respect to revenue, categories, timing, and geography. The addition of this standard did not have an impact on the current or comparative financial results recorded by the company on the company's condensed consolidated financial statements. Additionally, the company included language in Note 2 relating to IFRS 16 being leases, which is a standard issued but not yet effective until January 1, 2019. Upon adoption in Q1 2019, this new standard will result in the recognition of additional lease liabilities of approximately $182,000, as well as right-to-use assets of roughly $182,000. The impact on the consolidated statements of operations will be lower general and admin expenses, higher finance expenses due to the interest recognized on the lease obligation, and higher depreciation expense related to the right-to-use assets. With that, I'm going to turn the call back over to Dan.
All right, thank you, Kevin. So I'm pleased to say that both the Maitre D product line and the Secure Table Pay product lines achieved profitability in 2018 on a standalone product line cash basis. So that's kind of an indication of some of the stuff we've been working on over the past couple of years, getting the cost out of the businesses and positioning for growth. At the same time, the KDS business grew to roughly $2 million. That's up from $450 in 2016 and $1.7 in 2017. We continue to look at new ways to sell that product. We've integrated it with three other point-of-sale systems at this point, and we're exploring new channels to market. But the initial results are indicating that there is some demand out there for the product, decoupled from Maitre D, if you will. We continue to invest in the core Maitre D product, We're launching a new user interface for both the back office and the front office, or the point of sale system. Long overdue, and we're very excited that some of the feedback we're getting from that product. That was effectively alpha beta in Q1, and we'll be rolling out in Q2 in force. We've also invested in cloud-based reporting. Data Board Advanced Reporting is a partnership that helped us roll this out. It is a above-store, real-time, cloud-accessible product suite. Basically, every single receipt from a store is stored in the cloud so that the owner, business owner, can do a deep dive on the data at any point, any time, from anywhere. So that's exciting. We continue to focus on recurring revenue with everything we do, from products to services to new software maintenance programs, and continue to monitor that as a key KPI internally, and we're excited to keep pushing that forward. The hotel sector continues to be an important focus for us, specifically in the UK, but also in North America. We had a bit of softness in our 2018 hotel revenues in the in Europe, but I'm pleased to say that we've diversified our footprint into some broader global brands. Companies like Best Western, Novotel, and Meridian have all acquired Maitre d' systems in the last 980 days. So we're going to build on that as we take that through Europe as well as into North America. With that, I'll turn it over to Akash Sahai. Akash is our Executive Vice President of Strategy and Business Development, also responsible for our Secure Table Pay.
Hello, everyone. Let me give you a quick update on the Secure Table Pay business for 2018. It was actually a great year for Secure Table Pay from both a financial perspective and an installation perspective. We had our highest revenue ever and our most installations ever. Revenue actually grew to almost $900,000, and then compare that to a $375,000 in 2017. So, you know, fairly sizable increase. I think the math works out to about a 240% increase in revenue over the year over year. We had close to 800 site installations over the year, which is our most ever. That said, we weren't able to achieve everything that we wanted, and specifically 2018, we were planning to have as our rollout year in our U.S. business, and we weren't able to in fact achieve that. You know, the Secure Table Pay business is really two very separate businesses, the Canadian business and the U.S. business, so maybe I'll talk about them separately and break them out. Until 2018, all of the revenue for Secure Table Pay was in Canada only. Of the 890,000 total revenue for the Secure Table Pay business in 2018, 575,000 of that was from Canada. So you can compare that to the 375 in 2017 being all from Canada. So it's a, you know, greater than a 50% increase in revenue in the Canadian business alone. And in fact, more installations as well. We had 765 installations in Canada in 2018. Again, the highest number that we've had. And we, you know, sometimes you think that the Canadian market is saturated from a pay at the table perspective, with every restaurant having it. Of course, our solution is an integrated pay at the table that allows the pay at the table device, the handheld payment device, to integrate to the POS in the back end for the restaurant. And it seems that more and more restaurants in Canada are thinking it worthwhile to pay the additional amount for an integration to their back end, and we are the beneficiary of that move. Lots of upside, I think, that we're seeing still in Canada. We have 2,000 licenses still that are older multi-year licenses, so 5-year, 4-year, 3-year licenses that will come due and will come due for renewal, and we will then convert them to our new annual recurring revenue pricing, which we began in earnest in 2017, and in 2017 we're able to switch essentially all new licenses to the annual recurring model. So notwithstanding a very mature market for pay at the table in Canada. We think that 2019 should see another, you know, increase similar to what we saw 2018 over 2017. And we see some other very specific growth opportunities. For example, we are adding integrations and marketing with two large processors in Canada. You know, we thought we were complete. Again, given that we work and are integrated and certified with Chase and Global Payments and First Data and Moneris, and you know, really the very big processors in Canada, so there aren't many left. I can't tell you who they are. I think just by me excluding them, you get an idea of one or two of who are left, and we will be adding those in the coming months, and you'll see announcements about those. And so in addition to our normal organic growth, we see some very specific growth in the Canadian market from adding the few processors that we did not have as partners. Turning to the U.S., I think it's really a glass half full or glass half empty story. On the half empty story, we didn't roll out in the U.S. market as we wanted to. I think we've explained in earlier conversations that the Ingenico IWL device, which is the device that all 10,000 of our existing installations, the terminal installations are on to date, were on the Ingenico IWL terminal, and Ingenico at the beginning of 2018 in January declared that device end of life, and that really hurt our ability to move forward with a large launch in the U.S. market. And in addition, some of our important partners such as Vantiv and POS Portal in the U.S. were involved in large strategic transactions where they were acquired or either acquired or acquiring another very large company, and that led to a change in their strategy and priorities, all of which delayed our intended rollout or planned rollout in 2018. On the half full size, we actually did launch our product in the U.S. market, had our first true revenue and paying customer, and it was a very large and well-known brand with whom we had our initial paid installations. As a reminder, we started installing our product in the U.S. in fall of 2017, but those would have been pilots. So we had our first paying customers in several of them actually in 2018, one with a large corporate well-known brand. And I think we did a press release in Q4 of last year or end of Q3 announcing that, and that large partner is rolling our product out across their base. Perhaps more importantly, as a result of the stall of the rollout of our existing product, it gave us an opportunity to not stand still. I was going to say stand pat, but no one would have really enjoyed the pun. Pat, pay at the table, is the acronym for pay at the table, so we didn't stand pat. I'll use the pun now, and actually redesigned our product specifically for the U.S. market. Subtly, but perhaps most importantly, we changed the fundamental architecture, where before we had a bespoke payment application that was required for the use of our pay at the table solution, and we changed our solution so that it is no longer dependent on our bespoke payment application, and instead integrates to existing payment applications of our partners. Secondly, we changed our strategy from being tied to one device. We knew that we were going to do that eventually, but it catalyzed our move from our dependence on one device, the Ingenico IWL, to working with many other partners. We announced just recently in March the integration and launch of Secure Table Pay on PAX devices, and you'll see announcements with the other devices that we've been working throughout 2018 to integrate to in the coming weeks, and that's not the coming months, but actually the coming weeks we'll see announcements about the other devices. And we reconfigured really the entire user interface for the product, working with glass front, color, touchscreen devices, and adapting the product to that newer hardware so that our solution looks more like a solution you'd expect to see on a smartphone or tablet. Readying the product and changing the product for the U.S. market with the other devices and building demand until then will lead us now to finally being able to launch the new product in the U.S. market in Q2 of 2019. So, you know, really is coming weeks, as I said. That won't mean that we'll have a flood of revenue right away. There will be a lot of labs and pilots given that it's a new product with new devices, and I don't think we'll see meaningful revenue, type of the floodgates opening type revenue that we've always hoped for Secure Tablepay. We won't see that in Q2. That'll take some time, maybe the end of Q3 or more likely Q4 before we start seeing those large revenue orders coming in. That's the update on Secure Tablepay. I'll turn it over then to Tom to give you a strategic update.
Hello, everyone. It's Tom McCall here. As we talked about last year, the DLT loan is on the forefront of most people's minds, as it is every moment of every day for us. So we are engaged currently in a significant repayment plan. We hope to be able to announce that quite shortly. In the fourth quarter, we also talked about firms being interested in doing transactions with us. We've had a couple of unsolicited offers, so we've pursued those. We're engaged in probably five or six different entities right now. We've engaged a large consulting firm to assist us with this process, and we hope to be announcing something very soon with that as the process moves forward. So that's about all I have to add for right now.
All right. Thank you, Tom. At this point, we'll turn it over to questions, if there are any. Kevin? Operator?
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a brief moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, it is star one on your telephone keypad to ask a question. Your first question comes from David Plum, private investor. Your line is open.
I have a question on the payback period about breaking the lease in London.
Okay.
How many years before the $190,000 is recovered?
We were running at $10,000 a month with the previous commitment for a five-year lease, and we're down to, off the top of my head, I'd say our lease costs are now $2,500, so call it $7,500 plus the ability to exit a long-term lease.
Yeah, so under 2 years, which is decent use of capital in my opinion. The other question I have is, KDS, the revenues keep ramping up, but if I remember right during the call, SecureTable was profitable, and the other parts of the company were profitable. Is KDS profitable?
Yes, we bundled KDS with our Maitre D product from a financial perspective, so the statement should have been the standalone business of Maitre D and KDS is profitable. And so, yes, absolutely. KDS, if you go down the next layer, KDS is also profitable.
Okay. And the other question relates to the strategic transaction part with the five or six entities. I noticed you haven't named who the financial advisor you hired is. Is there a reason for that?
No specific reason. It's a large financial consultancy. It's not one of the big four, but just below the big four in terms of level. I think the reason we didn't, to be specific or more specific, is when we started the process, as opposed to going out with a big bang. Let's say if someone's initiating an M&A process and hires a financial advisor to signal to the market that they are that they're looking for a buyer is often the practice. And in our case, that wasn't the case, right? We weren't all of a sudden announcing to the market, putting a, so to speak, for sale sign on our lawn. And it really was a reaction to, we got some unsolicited offers. There were some discussions that management was having, internally with management and to the board, a decision to, we should take these offers and discussion seriously, and while we're doing that, we should do some more analysis as to the marketplace and see whether there are other potential better opportunities for the business. And it was a little bit of, for lack of better words, a creep of that, of the scope of those discussions and bring in that financial advisor. And that's simply why we didn't do a press release at that time announcing, but it's a well-known brand, just below top tier, the big four.
Okay. Thank you very much for your answers.
Thank you.
I'll pass it on to somebody else.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Your next question comes from Michael Reed, private investor. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. For a long time, we've been hearing that we would get Pazera signed up with all the big U.S. payment processors. I'm wondering, how is that going, and when we do get agreements, will they be publicly announced?
And when you say Pazera, I'm presuming you mean Secure Table Pay.
That's right, yes.
Right? Yes, and so the large payment processors in the U.S., we have announced our certifications with them, and those include Vantive, who is now Vantive and WorldPay, and goes by WorldPay, First Data, and Sterling, and Heartland, which is now Global Payments. So those four large payment processors we have been certified with, and we have made those announcements in the marketplace earlier. For what it's worth, I know that other investors or even management has said, okay, that's great that we're certified with those payment processors, but where does that, how does that bring revenue forward? And that's why we actually changed the business model to be less focused on the payment processors and more on the other distribution channels in the marketplace, such as ISOs or dealers. And to do that, we've switched the architecture so that we're no longer dependent on the bespoke payment application that we've written for a First Data or a Vantive, and can work with a partner like PAX, and I can mention them because we've already announced them in the marketplace, where they, for example, have their own certifications with other processors, for example, like TSYS. So as opposed to us having to now certify with other processors like TSYS, and obviously TSYS is one of the largest processors in the U.S., we don't have to go through that process to certify, which takes up to a year. We can simply piggyback on or use the certification that PAX has by integrating our solution to PAX's existing payments application. So more focus on the hardware.
Are you getting any direct sales now with the payment processors?
We're getting it's just a trickle, Michael. We're getting probably the better answer is no. That the payment processors are not selling or marketing the product. They're making the product available, as in the product's available on their network, but they aren't the ones actually marketing the product in the U.S. marketplace. Now, very different to the Canadian market. In the Canadian market, the payment hardware is sold only by the payment processors. So you can't buy, for example, an Ingenico IW device in Canada is only sold by the payment processors, the First Data, the Moneris's of this world. You don't buy it from a dealer. You don't buy it from a POS company. You don't buy it even from a hardware. In fact, you don't even buy it from Ingenico, not even for a large enterprise sale. In the U.S., you can buy an Ingenico IW device at a Costco, in fact. And there are many other distribution channels. And so we're working with all of those hardware distribution channels to bundle our solution, our software, with that hardware.
And I see, too, we have a new public company, Lightspeed, that seems to have some of the same capabilities as SecurePay. Are they a strong competitor, or are they also a potential merger or a candidate?
They aren't really a competitor as it pertains to a pay-at-the-table solution either in Canada or the U.S. They do have a payment product, but it isn't a wireless pay-at-the-table solution that integrates to other POSs, which is really what our product is. So they are not a competitor on the pay-at-the-table side. They do have a POS that compete with Maitre d'. As to the potential strategic conversation, I can't comment right now on any of the specific parties that we're engaged with in those strategic conversations.
Okay, thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call back over to the presenters.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your attention and questions, and look forward to having more discussions as we roll out the rest of the quarter. That's the end of the call. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.